Okay, I'm Paulina McDougall, and it's October 2nd, 2013. I'm here in the office of George Denton, and we're going to talk a little bit about George's career at the Climate Institute. And I'd like to begin by asking you just how you got interested in geology in the first place.
Oh, I got interested in geology. In the first place, I was a student at Tufts, and Tufts held a week of orientation for new students prior to the beginning of classes. And in that week of orientation, they gave a series of lectures on different subjects. They had a physics professor give a lecture, and a geology professor gave a lecture. And I never knew anything about geology, so I went to the lecture and I liked it. And so I took geology and I liked it even more. And so I decided to major in geology. And then when I was at Tufts, had the opportunity to go to Antarctica a few times, and one of the Antarctic trips was Hal Bourne's from the University of Maine. And he had gone to Tufts years before that. And so I began to like it. So I decided to be a geologist. And then I went on to graduate school after that.
At Tufts or elsewhere?
No, at Yale.
At Yale?
Yeah.
So when was that first trip to Antarctica?
Oh, boy. My first one, I think, 58.
58?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then again in 60.
Uh-huh.
And a long time ago. And Hal was along in the one in 1960. Then I saw Hal again a few years later. I think probably not 1963 or 64. He took a leave of absence from Maine and studied at Yale for a year. And I was a student there at the time. And so I got interested in Maine. I like Northern New England. And I stayed at Yale quite a while because I was a postdoc there. I went to the University of Stockholm. But anyway, when I finished all that, I came up here. I've been here ever since.
Did Hal recruit you? Or
yeah,
were
yeah.
there just an open... Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. And he met me at Yale in Antarctica. And Phil Osberg recruited me, too. Phil started the climate change group here. Phil Osberg did. Do you know Phil?
I don't.
You should interview Phil. He's the key person of all.
Where is he now?
He lives down the street here in Forest Ann. Yeah, he's the one who had the idea, and he had Hal here already, so mm-hmm. he's the one who promoted it. He's basically the one who hired me, Phil Osberg.
Okay. Was he head of Earth Sciences?
He was head of Earth Sciences then, was part of civil engineering, and had just become a separate department. And Phil was the chairman, mm-hmm. and he decided that climate change was something that would expand in the future. And he had, when he was a student at Dartmouth, had worked with the Elder Goldthwaite and had gone to Harvard at graduate school and couldn't decide whether to be a bedrock geologist or a climate science scientist. He became a bedrock geologist, but he always liked climate science. And so he and Hal together are the ones who started it here.
So you were interested in geology at Tufts, and you went on to study it. How did you come to go to Antarctica?
Well, the professor who gave the lecture at Tufts and who was the head of the department worked in Antarctica, Bob Nichols. Bob had gotten his PhD at Harvard, and he was teaching at Tufts, and he was interested in Antarctica. And one of the early explorers in Antarctica was Finn Ronnie. The Ronnie Ice Shelf is named after him. And Finn Ronnie's father was a Norwegian. Finn Ronnie's father went to on the Antarctic expedition. It was Roald Amundsen that was the first to reach the South Pole in 1912. He built the tent, actually, that Amundsen left to the South Pole for Scott when Scott arrived. Of course, Scott died on the way back. But anyway, for some reason, Ronnie's son, Finn, immigrated to the United States, and he became I think it was a commander in the U.S. Navy. He was in the Navy when the war broke out, and he was was stationed in the Pentagon, and at the Pentagon was Admiral Dodson, who was in charge of procurement of Navy ships, ships for the Navy during the war. And Dodson's son, Robert Dodson, was a high school student then, and he, in those days, apparently, according to Bob Dodson, the message was passed around the Pentagon by runners, high school students who ran from office to office with messages. And every time he came into Finn Ronnie's office, Finn would say, "Sit down, young man, and when this war is over, I want your father to get me a ship because I want to go to Antarctica." Lo and behold, if he did. When the war was over, he got him an ocean-going tug called the Spirit of... What was the name of the Spirit of Beaumont or something like that? And Finn Ronnie organized an American expedition in 1947.
How do you spell his last name?
R-O-N-N-E.
R-O-N-A-E?
R-O-N-N-E.
N-N-E.
Finn, F-I-N-N is his first name.
Okay.
And anyway, as a reward for that... this is how this is a story I'm telling you, how this whole Climate Institute started. No one knows the story now. I've never told anyone. But, because I knew Bob Dodson well. He's still alive. Bob was in the 10th Mountain Division near the end of the war, and then he went on as a graduate student at Harvard in geology. And as a reward for getting the ship, Finn Ronnie made him the field assistant to the geologist going to Antarctica. And about 3 months before they were ready to go to Antarctica, the geologist quit. And so they didn't have a geologist. And so Finn Ronnie told Bob to find a geologist. And so he went in to Professor Kirk Bryan at Harvard. And Kirk Bryan was the one that Phil Osberg had come down to from Dartmouth to study with at Harvard, too, at about that time. And Kirk Bryan told Bob that he knew of someone over at Tufts by the name of Bob Nichols. Go see Bob Nichols. And so this young boy went over to Tufts, and he said, "Would you be interested in going to Antarctica?" And Bob, only 3 years, Bob said, "I better check with my wife and daughter before I go." But he did, and he went. And Bob was his field assistant, was Bob Nichols' field assistant. And they made, at the time, it was the longest dog sledge trip ever made in Antarctica. Maybe not, because the Finn Ronnie's Roald Amundsen's must have been longer. But they were out a long, long time, and that went on. And so Bob was, that was 47, 48. By the time I arrived at Tufts in 57, interest had renewed in Antarctica, and the IGY had arrived. And so Bob was invited back as an employee at Metcalf and Eddy Engineers as part of the IGY, and then went on to do... That's when Antarctic research started after IGY. Have you heard of IGY? International Geophysical Year. It's what changed all of science in the United States. And that's what began the Antarctic, real research in Antarctica. Mm-hmm. That's when McMurdo Station was started to be erected, and planes were introduced, and field parties were put out all over Antarctica. And from then on, the United States Antarctic Program has just gone on and on. It's a big program now.
What was the draw?
The draw?
What drew
politics.
Drew people to Antarctica, I mean?
I don't know. It's science. There were a lot of scientific questions associated with Antarctica that weren't answered. So, Bob went and... I'm just trying to remember, 58, and then we went again at 60, and then I forgot about Antarctica for a while. When I worked in Yukon and Alaska and places, and went to Yale, and I ended up here. And then we started off and on to work in Antarctica again from here. Then I did it for quite a few years, and then Brenda Hall, you know Brenda? Professor Hall? She's my student. She's taken over from me in Antarctica. Not for me. I mean, she's doing it now. I don't do it anymore. I shouldn't say take it over for me. She's much better than I ever was. And she's working there now. And I've graduated north, where it's warmer, in New Zealand and Patagonia. That's where I work now. But together, Brenda and I bring a lot of students to. She and I worked together in Patagonia last year. And we bring a lot of students to these places. And And more recently, we ran into, you see the book we put out, Fate of Greenland?
I have not.
Oh, it won the Phi Beta Kappa Science Book Award for the year this last year.
Because and we the ran title into, is again? Something Greenland. I didn't get
it. Fate of Greenland.
Fate of Greenland. Thank you.
By MIT Press. Yeah, Phi Beta Kappa gave it. I didn't think it was much of a book, but they gave it the Science Book of the Year. Best science book published in the United States.
Congratulations.
Well, not to me. Well, four of us wrote it. But we wrote it. The reason I brought it up is we wrote it for a fellow who's been helping us for the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who owned Land's End Corporation. You heard of Land's End?
Yeah.
Yeah. He gave us quite a bit of money. In fact, we're going out to his place again, Brenda and I, and the students go to, end of next week in Wisconsin, where Land's End is.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you a few questions about going to Antarctica, if you don't mind.
I haven't done that in a long time.
Well, yeah. But
I'm not even really that interested in it now.
But from your memories of those trips,
yeah.
Was it hard to work there? I mean,
oh, no, it's simple.
So cold and...
It's not cold.
You have difficulties with instruments?
It's much easier than working in Maine.
Why is that?
Oh, it's wide open. There's no vegetation. It's not very cold, and it's dry. There's nothing. There's not much to it. It's in fact too hot there to do a lot of work.
That's funny because I thought it was ice covered.
Not in the summer.
No.
Oh, hell no. It's the easiest place to work in the world, I think, that I've ever worked. Much easier than Patagonia or New Zealand or Alaska.
Hmm.
The Antarctica is the easiest. Oh, Antarctica is a very easy place to work. Hell, they give you everything there. They give you helicopters, food. I mean, it's tractors to ride around in. It is simple. Everything's provided. The U.S. taxpayer pays for everything. It's unbelievable, actually.
That's interesting.
Everywhere else, we have to make do ourselves.
Yeah.
No, Antarctica is a snap.
So Antarctica's it's very well supported.
Ships, icebreakers, helicopters, ski planes, C-130s, you name it, you have it.
Fascinating.
It's unbelievable. It's just money piled on top of money to work there.
Why is that?
Political. It's the only, political is not the only reason, science too, but it's the only continent on Earth that's not owned by anybody.
Ah.
And so every country keeps a foothold, and the only way they're allowed to do that is through science, scientific stations.
Mm-hmm. So no one's been able to claim it.
They all have claimed it, but the claims are set aside now with the treaties that allow international cooperation, that sort of thing. Sure, no one's going to let it go because it's a huge continent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's science as well, but the reason they keep at it is because of politics. And they spend quite a bit of money because these stations are very expensive to maintain at the South Pole and McMurdo. But the scientists, whoa, what a deal. I've done field work in a lot of places on Earth, and this is the easiest field work on the planet, is to work in Antarctica. It's not cold, don't get me. They provide you with enough gear so that on the few days it might get cold, it's no problem. Most people working down there don't go outside. They work in buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you are outside, it's pleasant. There's no rain, you see. It doesn't get wet. You don't get wet, and therefore you don't get cold. And I can't tell you how easy it is.
Hmm. So you didn't find any particular challenges to being there?
None. No, not working in Antarctica. Hell, that was the easiest work I've ever done in my life.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a number of earlier explorers, so you're very aware of the exploration literature from these earlier explorations of Antarctica.
Well, because I've been to all the places and seen all the spots they were at. Yeah.
So when you went there, did you feel a kinship with those earlier?
No. It was a totally... They didn't have planes and helicopters and radios and GPSs and satellite phones and anything else they wanted to help them out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's lush now. I'm not sure how hard they actually had it because it's not that hostile an environment. The Norwegians made it look simple. They just rushed to the pole and back. They didn't have any problems. The British made it look harder. They died. But they probably had it hard, yeah, I suppose they did. But you can't believe how straightforward and easy it is. People think it's cold and hostile or something. Hell, we've had, I don't know how many students go down, and they think it's a vacation. Hmm. Compared to a Maine winter, phew.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Give me a sense of what a typical day would be there when you were doing work in Antarctica.
Years ago, well, you'd get up in the morning, have breakfast, go out, and every day you'd be looking at a different part of the terrain, mapping it in and collecting samples, which we brought back for dating, isotopic dating. And
samples of ice?
Rocks? No, these were samples of rock and material within the rock.
Okay.
Because we were studying the glacial history of Antarctica. And we just systematically did that in various valleys along the Trans-Antarctic Mountains, in the mountains, trying to reconstruct the glacial history of Antarctica. Brenda's the one who does that now. I haven't
done it. We'll definitely talk to her.
Yeah, I haven't done it in 15 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to do it a lot long ago.
What surprised you about Antarctica?
Nothing.
No? Mm-hmm. No surprises?
No, you seem to think it's someplace special.
Well, I've never been there, so.
Oh, well, I've been there 30 times. And I tell you, there's nothing special about it. It's interesting scientific problems about how the ice sheet might control sea level, how it controls southern hemisphere climate, and the katabatic winds that come off that drive the circuit, part of the circulation of the Southern Ocean. But if you're thinking about adventure, it's not adventurous. That's mm-hmm. not adventure. Not at all. It's not exploration. Hell, you can see every rock on it on Google. Why is that exploration?
But that's only recently.
Even then, it was.
In the early 60s?
Oh, it's the same. Yeah. It was very easy.
It was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the terrain is easy to walk on. And there aren't any big rivers to cross. There's no rain. No mosquitoes.
That's amazing. There's no mosquitoes.
No, it's working in the woods of Maine is far harder than working there. That's simple.
That's interesting.
Yeah, the perception that it's hard is ridiculous.
So, I mean, I'm sure that when you went there, you saw yourself more as a scientist than as an explorer.
I never saw myself as an explorer. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Think of oneself as an explorer. That's ridiculous. No, I was interested in scientific questions, the origin of ice ages. And the background for climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't an explorer.
So when you were hired, were you hired into the Institute at the time, or did you have a separate, like a geology post?
Into the department here. There was no institute at the time.
Okay, so you were full-time faculty in geology.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. And then, so how did you come to be part of the Institute?
The Institute was made up of, I think, 1972.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And we were just assigned to the Institute at that stage, part of the Institute, part of the department, and there weren't that many of us,
mm-hmm.
probably six or seven. So that's how I became a member of the Institute.
Now, I understood from talking with Hal and others that the Institute had set things up so that half of faculty time would be in research with the Institute and half would be with their department. Is that how it worked for you?
Yeah, approximately, yes. It was a bit more than half in the Institute, but that's roughly correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the appointments were split between the two units.
Did that cause any problems with the geology folks in the department?
No, I'm still a member of the geology department. I'm right
here. Right, but I meant at the time, did they have any issues about losing some of you to the Institute?
Thinking back a long time. Let's go on to the next question.
Okay. what do you believe the Climate Change Institute, or the Quaternary as it used to be called, what is their most important contribution to our climate understanding of climate today?
I suppose the most important contribution was made before Paul Manske arrived. The Greenland Ice Core would have been the most important contribution.
What did the Greenland Ice Core reveal?
It revealed, well, it wasn't, it carried on after what's called GISP 1, Green Ice Project 1, which had suggested the Presence of Abrupt Climate Changes. That was run by Chester Langway at Crail. Okay. And then Greenland Ice Sheet 2. I had nothing to do with it, but Greenland Ice Sheet 2. But that wasn't done through the University of Maine. That was done through one of our members earlier and a number of other institutions. Really firmed up this idea, along with the Europeans. They did a study at the same time called mm-hmm. GRIP. And they showed abrupt climate changes in Greenland. And that's taken off now. And a lot of people discovered those in various parts of the Earth. Mm-hmm. So I would say that is a major contribution. I can't really think of any others.
Okay. That seems to be something that's...
Sorry?
That's been brought up by others as well as being a significant...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. It was done by a group of universities, probably 20 of them total, involved mm-hmm. in that, and then a number of European universities.
Was that National Science Foundation?
Yeah, that was ours. Our part was funded by the Science Foundation. Mm-hmm. It involved, I think, something, well, Paul can tell you better than I, something along the order of 20 institutions. And in Europe, there was a similar, it's called GRIP. They were done simultaneously mm-hmm. in the early 90s. But they were preceded by important ones before that. There were cores that other places in Greenland were showing basically the same thing. This was just a recognition that they existed mm-hmm. and got studied in detail. And that's what happened in the early 90s. And I would say that amongst people here, that would be the most important contribution. Paul's here now, but he wasn't here then.
Right.
Other than that, been a lot of here and there and somewhere else. It's
putting the pieces together.
Yeah, putting pieces together.
Yeah. How does your research in particular contribute to the Institute's goals or mission? Or
not that much right now.
Well, in the past.
I say not
in
at all.
The past. I know you're retired, right?
I'm not retired.
You're not retired?
No. I don't know that it actually did. The goals of the Institute now. I'm an outlier in the Institute now. I'm not a...
You're certainly one of the foundational members.
At the beginning I was, but not now. I would have to say now... I think what we did then was to establish enough of an Institute so that it could build to what it is now. That would be our contribution. But nothing spectacular. And allow people to move here. So now it's huge. So I guess we held it together for 20, 30 years.
I think you're being overly modest.
I don't think so. No, I don't. So there are a lot of people doing it now.
Yeah.
So, it's hard. What was the question?
Your personal contribution.
My personal contribution would have been to help it in the beginning. And to get expeditions going when it was small in various places, and then to help, along with George Jacobson and Dan Bellinup and others, to run it for a little bit after Hal stopped running it. But it was small then. It wasn't very big.
So you were chair for a while?
Of the Institute?
Or director? Or
yeah, I was, for 5 years. To get some money. And
I remember when I was here, you were graduate coordinator.
I could have been.
Yes,
I have been done that. I've done that. I've been director, but those are years ago.
Yeah.
So, other than that, that's it. When Paul took over then, when he came, and it's exploded since then.
Yeah. Obviously, it's been very successful, no question. But I'm wondering if there were, along the way, were there obstacles that you had to be overcome?
Actually, it was a pretty good ride. University of Maine's treated us well, and I think we treated them well, too. We've taken a lot of students from the University of Maine all over the place. If you run into any student in this building, ask them. Just ask them out of the blue, where you been? I'm talking about the climate change students.
Right.
They'll tell you they've been to Greenland. And every one of them, without exception. We take undergraduates, too. So,
And obviously a lot of students have gone through here.
Oh, yeah, they've done well. My students teach all over the place now.
Do you have any students out there in the world that you point to that you feel are particularly successful?
Well, Brenda.
She was a student?
Oh, yeah. We have students in a lot of universities, Chicago, BU, Maine, Stockholm, Chile, Victoria University, New Zealand, my students. They're all over the place. Everywhere I go, I see them. I ran into them running through Chile. Just get off the airplane and walked around the airport, and I ran by accident into three or four of them there, of Chileans. So we have them in quite a few places. Mm-hmm. That's satisfying.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Aaron Putnam just got to be assistant professor at Columbia. Yeah, they're doing okay.
Good.
Doing well.
It's good to hear. Now, what about state and federal support for the kinds of work that you folks do? Has that been...
For us?
Yes.
Well, the state supports us through the university, of course, by supporting the building and the university. Our support for all the expeditions and things comes largely from the Science Foundation and from NOAA. And we've been helped a lot by Mr. Comer of the Comer Science Education Foundation, Land's End. Support a lot of students here. Mm-hmm. A lot. And he's a good friend. And we have another group that doesn't like to be named, but in Portland it helps us a lot. And so we have private and public funding. We don't get money directly from the state to do the research.
Right.
But we don't expect that to happen. At least we don't.
Yeah.
I think Paul does.
What about the MEIF? Is it?
I don't even know what MEIF is.
What is that? I forget what the letters mean, but basically it's research funding that was set up by the legislature for the university research.
Oh, yeah. I think Paul gets it. I don't know that. You have to ask Paul.
Okay.
He gets it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
No, I've never had that.
Okay. Just curious about that. No. Have you been involved in any way in policy relating to climate change? Are you interested in that? Do you follow it? Are you?
I'm so busy in this other stuff. The one who does that again is Paul. Okay. Paul is a man of incredible energy, mm-hmm. and I'm not. Brenda and I concentrate on the glacial history. That's okay. All we can handle.
Yeah.
We got, she's leaving for Antarctica within a month with a number of students. We'll be gone for a long time. We just got back from Patagonia at the end of the spring. We chartered a boat down there and did research off of that in the Cordillera Darwin. And then I'll be leaving for New Zealand in early January, be down there to middle March. And it keeps us busy.
Yeah, sounds
just
like
these little things. But no, I think the policy decisions would be in Paul's hands.
Mm-hmm.
He's an expert in this. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
Okay.
I think you should talk to Paul, not.
Well,
not
we are going to. We have talked with him, and we will talk with him again.
Oh yeah, he would be the
leader. We talked to him initially, but then I think after having talked to a lot of other folks, we have new questions. So.
Yeah, well, he would be by far the leading light of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Without Paul, I don't think there'd be much here.
Yeah. Well, thank you for. Seeing us, and I'd like to just ask you one last question, and that is there something that you'd like to put on record that maybe I didn't think to ask you about?
No, that's fine.
Anything? Okay.
Could I jump in with a
yes.
question, if that's all right? You had mentioned that Paul has had a pretty profound impact on the Institute.
Sure.
I understand that you were fairly important in actually getting Paul here. I'm wondering if you could tell us that.
Well, Paul's
story.
First job was with me. Yeah, that was a long time ago. He was a postdoctoral researcher here with me when he finished at Ohio State for a few years. So I think that's why he grew to like Maine. And then he went on to New Hampshire. I did help him get the job in New Hampshire, too. So I've known Paul a long time. And he was indirectly involved in those first expeditions we took to Antarctica, too, because another person from Tufts was a fellow by the name of Parker Culkin, who went with Bob Nichols the same year I went in 1960. And Parker was at Ohio State then, and he took Paul either the next year or the year after. So right after that, Parker took Paul, because Parker had been at Tufts and he was then at Ohio State as a graduate student. And Paul was just arriving. So I'm not sure the details Paul could tell you, but somehow Paul became associated with Parker, who was associated with us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a matter of happenstance, really.
Yeah.
he never went directly with us, but indirectly he did. Yeah, Paul, when Paul finished at Ohio State, he came here for at least a couple of years.
That reminds me of something else I just wanted to ask you. And this is, many departments are pretty closed and they don't necessarily want to work with other departments. And what's kind of amazing to me about the Institute is how you are so interdisciplinary. You've got glaciologists and glacial geologists, ethnobotanists and so on, archaeologists all working together. Why is it working for this group?
I think Hal started that. Hal's an easygoing fellow, and he's not threatening anybody, so he can arrange all this. And Paul's done the same thing after that. And I think one of the keys was that Hal had the salaries paid through from both the department and the Institute, so mm-hmm. there was a more sense of loyalty to both. And the departments cooperate. This department likes it. geologists and other disciplines work with us quite a bit of the time in glaciological modeling, and I don't sense any resentment at all. Mm-hmm. They participate in the Institute business, and they're members of the Institute, and quite a few of them are. The others that aren't, but seem very happy with the whole thing. We're very happy with the department, so it just doesn't. I don't sense any problems.
So having the loyalty to both groups was important, obviously. Do you think that the level of research has something to do with it, or?
Well, they're every bit as good or better researchers than we are, I think. So I don't think there's any sense of jealousy one side mm-hmm. or the other. I mean, they are excellent. This department's good. I mean, it's very good. So I don't sense any problems along those lines. Everyone seems happy doing their thing.
It just seems, knowing how other colleges and groups work, you know,
it's unusual.
It's unusual. Yes.
But it's
been very successful.
It's real.
It's a great model, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't. I suspect it's hard to make it work, but this one, for some reason, works.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't many people who cause trouble here. Let me put it that way. And the universities are filled with that sort of people elsewhere. I've heard, although I never run into them. They are at each other's throats in other places, and that I've heard. I haven't actually seen this, but I've never noticed that. That doesn't happen here. I don't notice it.
That's good. Yeah.
No, we support each other.
Yeah.
If they need supporting, we support them. And they do the same. So, there it is. I think your key person is to go talk to Paul.
Oh, yes, we will. Do you have any other questions?
Sure, I was just going to ask, could you point to any specific instances in which you conducted research with somebody in the institution who, in the institute, who was not a geologist?
Jim Fastbrook at Computer Science. We put a book out together, Jim and I and some others, called The Last Great Ice Sheets with John Wiley. Jim, no, I wouldn't say the research project. Well, yes, in South America with George Jacobson on pollen diagrams in South America. He was extensively involved there. That was back in the 90s with a South American student, Patricio Moreno Mancada, who came to Maine to get his PhD, and George and I were co-supervisors, but George worked with us in South America doing this. Patricio is now probably the leading quaternary scientist in this country of Chile. Mm. And so it'll be George and Jim of specific projects that were funded by the Science Foundation and that we worked on together. I worked years with Terry Hughes. He's not a geologist, he's a glaciologist, but he's in this department, or was in this department. I wouldn't call him a geologist, but I worked with him for many, many years. But I haven't actually been in the field to work with archaeologists. Others, those are the only three, I would say. I talk to them all the time, and I'm interested. I go to their lectures and go to the seminars, but I don't actually have a concrete funded project with them. But I did with George and with Jim and with Terry. Right now, my projects are with Brenda, probably most of them. And then also, our projects are joint with Columbia University. And so all my students, they're rolling upstairs, Brendan's students, they spend probably a third of their academic career at Columbia. And we have a very unique arrangement with Columbia. I'm an adjunct at Columbia, you see, in the department. In fact, with Wally Broca, who's the most famous scientist in our field, by far, he and I taught the beginning course there for a number of years. And so the laboratory that we use for what we call exposure dating, a new technique that we're using to attack scientific problems, is was built and paid for by Mr. Comer. He built the building at Lamont. We call it Lamont. It's ranked number one in the country, Columbia Department, that I'm an adjunct at. Have been for a long time. I've been working with Columbia scientists. Those are the ones I work with, mainly, not the ones at Maine. So I've worked there since 1972. And the result is that we have a unique arrangement, because I don't think any other university has this arrangement with Columbia, that our students go there. Every student you see here goes down there. And they go there for 4 or 5 months at a time and live there and work in the labs. And their results come out of there. And I work with their leading scientist, Wally Broker. He's a leading scientist in our field. I work with him on a daily basis, basically. And with their other scientists, they're tremendous scientists. Mm. So I write papers with them. I work with them. All my papers are with them. My research is with them. My funding is joint with them. So I work. It's strange. You say, who do you work with here? I work with Columbia University.
Yeah.
They're interested in what I do, and they're the best in the world. That's who I work with.
Mm-hmm.
So we publish. We publish consistently in Science and Nature, Nature Geoscience. But that's why I'm a little bit of a outlier here, because I work with another university.
Yeah. Well, that's a great connection to have, though.
It is, and it's good for our students.
Sure.
They love it.
Yeah.
They get to see the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And so every one of these students in these seminars that we have go down there. We have funded dormitory, not they're only really dormitory homes. The Columbia University Geology Department's at Lamont Doherty, and it's located beside the Hudson and Palisades, New York. And so it's not the downtown campus. The students get to the downtown campus by bus, a 45-minute ride across the George Washington Bridge and down there. I've spent a lot of time there. Sometimes I spent more time there than I did at Maine.
Mm.
So I was teaching courses there and have students there. And they will put me up in a dorm and give me a car. I like it there. But I like it here better.
Mm.
So it's very good for the students' education, because they take courses there, they get credits there, they work with the laboratory people there, they do their own laboratory work there, and it's world class, and they like it.
Mm.
So
yeah,
they have a joint main, and one of them, Aaron Putnam from Presque Isle, was just hired. He's worked there with them, they like him a lot, so he's now an assistant professor there.
Wow.
And Mike Kaplan, who was here, he's there now permanently too. And they want Toby Kaufman, this kid next door here, they want to move him down there. So we have quite a main influence at Columbia now through my group.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's what I do. That's why. That's who I work with, have all my life. So.
Yeah.
From the time we were small till now.
Yeah, I think that's also a fairly unusual arrangement.
Unique.
Yeah, is it unique?
Unique.
Yeah, probably is.
Yeah. No, I get along well with the scientists. No, we worked together. I worked together for 30 years with them, from CLIMAP right on. That's when we hired Paul, through CLIMAP back in 70, about 72, 71, something like that. That was through Columbia, too. Paul got to see part of that at the time. And that's what I do. I'm down New York a lot.
Okay. Any other questions, Adam?
No, that's all.
Well, thank you very much. I'm
going to
end the interview and ask if you don't mind signing a release form so we can use the interview. And we'll be...
do you show me what you write?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I don't want anything embarrassing. I don't think I said anything.
I don't think you did either, but yeah, well, certainly.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
We've actually started talking about how we'll be putting something together.
Do Well, let me sign the release after I see what you're doing.
Well, the release is only to allow us to do two things. One, deposit the interview in the Folk Life Center archives, which is where all the other interviews are going.
Okay.
And allowing us to use it.
Yeah, but
we're not going to...
Let me just look in case there's something in there I don't like.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. But this is not for writing.
Yeah.
Put this...